Welcome back into Sports Talk. We just got here after spending the day in the Caesars Superdome for the open practice, the black and gold held in front of fans today. I want to get into some of the sound from Dennis Allen to bring to you. So our training camp sound bank brought to you by the sound banking of First American. Dennis Allen was asked, Clint Kubiak will be calling plays on the field this game after having the previous two in the press box. What's up with that, Coach?
Listen, I think it's just one of those things. I want to get him down on the field. We've had two games with him up in the box. I want to get him down on the field and evaluate it. See how it goes. See what it operates like. And so I think ultimately, what we need to do is we need to do what's best for our players. Number one, and then secondly would be, you know, we see how Clint likes it in terms of his comfortability calling from upstairs or downstairs.
Well, if you're not dealing with the human element, and you always are, that's what you're dealing with. Your vantage point, you can see the defense way better
from upstairs.
Yeah, it ain't even close.
Right.
Versus
field level.
That's
tough.
What I've always felt. I think there's value in having the play caller up there because see not necessarily what you're doing, what the defense is.
Yes. No, what the defense, how you going to
like call how the safety's
play,
playing, how they're, yeah.
How you going to set up plays. The only thing why I think it works, because I've done
that interaction between the player and coach.
Interaction if you're young. Like I would say if that's a Spencer Rattler or Jake Haener. But Derek Carr, come on.
But wouldn't you say it's like college players are used to that? Like most college offensive coordinators are going to be up
yes, in the booth. Yes. Yeah. I've been a part of both. If you have the offensive coordinator on the field, then whoever's up in the booth almost has to be a clone of the offensive coordinator. It's like 1 and 1A. Like Carl Smith always wanted to be on the sideline. So Coach Wallace and all, what they were sending down that the run game, pass game, to put their input, they were thinking on the same wavelength. But then when I look at June Jones and different people, like I said, I've been part of both Coach Leahy. They'd be up in the press box. But you get more veteran quarterback, they don't have to look the coach in the eye to get things done. You could get an – what do they have now? You remember they used to have a phone? Remember you see those old films and you pick up the phone
right.
And all? So, Jeff, what do they do now? They have they just talk through the helmet if they try to talk to the press box?
Well, no, I don't think the players can talk back through the helmet. I think they would have to get on a headset to talk back.
Oh, the headset. But
yeah, they can hear. He can hear Clint in his headset, but he can't respond.
Yeah,
that's my understanding.
Like to talk to the press box, you have to pick up an actual phone.
Yeah.
I saw an interview a while back that Joe Montana said he would just call his wife sometimes on the sideline.
I don't know. That sounds like a little BS right there.
I don't know if they dial out.
I don't
a rotary dial phone.
Yeah, I think that's just like a direct line.
Little long story there he's telling.
Yeah, direct line. But who knows? It's Joe Montana. They might have been so far ahead he could do the hell he wants. So
to me, the thing is, if you trust Andrew Janoco, and you trust John Benton, who's the new offensive line coach. Janoco's the quarterback's coach. You trust the wide receiver's coach to be able to be kind of a carbon copy and like speak on the same wavelength as Clint.
Right.
If they can communicate the same way, it's not an issue. If there's stuff getting hung up in translation and you're not, and the players don't feel like they're getting the information the right way or as quickly or as effectively, then it becomes a problem. So that's really, it's not really whether you need him up there or you need him down there. It's whether the communication works.
It's all about communication. Because it can't be a cluster, you know what. Okay, shut up. The coach is screaming, shut up. Too many people are talking. They're all trying to put their input. There almost has to be a natural flow, ebb and flow.
Right.
And who's talking what. Okay, down in distance. Okay, what are my running options? Let's say you're on the field, Clint Kubiak. What are my running options down in distance? Passing options. And then you kind of go from there. But not like I always cut you off, Steve. Whatever. Not everybody talking at once. So that's when you got to be a good listener sometimes. And
so, Bobby, if you were in this, if you were part of that communication, would it be a problem?
No. This is what I would do. I'd want to be in the press box, and I would just say, "This is what we're running." And now, someone on side of me it wouldn't be communicating. Where a lot of people are hearing this,
yeah.
Give me a bunch of first down, second down, third down runs, and the running game coordinator, passing game coordinator, and then I'm ultimately making the decision, and then I'm sending it down who my quarterback trusted, might be the wide receiver coach, but they talk one-on-one, and then, no, this is what we're doing, to take that approach. You know, talk about play calling, how it makes all the difference. Who gets more credit than he deserves for winning an LSU national championship with Joe Burrow? And he's in the NFL with the Bills.
Brady.
Joe Brady.
Yeah. Guess who was calling the plays?
Steve Ensminger.
Steve Ensminger. I'm telling you.
He was the pass game coordinator.
What he would do is he would tell Ensminger now and then, help him out on third and long situations or maybe some red zone plays. But as far as calling those plays with that record-breaking offense, Steve Ensminger is too humble. Steve Ensminger should get way more credit than what he did. Now, Steve's so humble, he just, let me just coach the tight ends. You know, I'm making a good living. But he was actually a coordinator, and he had a lot of skins in the wall. Way back in the day, like I want to say Clemson, Georgia, before he even came back to LSU. You know, he was an old LSU quarterback. You know, Steve Ensminger tried out for the Saints at quarterback. I don't
know. What's his nickname? The Gunslinger? What was his nickname?
Steve was awesome to hang out with. I had a few good nights with him. Steve was awesome. But a lot of times people don't give him enough credit he didn't toot his horn to get all that recognition. So the bottom line is you look how productive they were. So there's a lot of different ways to do it, Jeff, like you're saying. Coach Kubiak's on the field or he's in the press box, you cannot have chaos. It has to be smooth. You got to have the communication
right.
I have a
question for you. So now, obviously, the tablets, right? Like, if you're on the sideline, you got to look at the tablets and they show you the pictures. That's obviously a lot faster than it used to be. How did they communicate those pictures and images when you were playing?
Polaroids. They had this string.
Someone out there shaking them to get them ready?
No, but they had this string that they would take from above and these Polaroids would slide down the string in the dome.
Sounds efficient.
And then all of a sudden... But it was still pictures, you know, and it was like, then you kind of figure, okay, look how they're rotating the defense, how they're trying to disguise the defense. So that was like the dinosaur day,
right?
When you think about that. No, it was so primitive,
right?
But that's all you had.
Well, are you able to, I've always wondered, you know, how much can you really take away from the still images? Because you can't see how the safety's kind of
This is how they would do, Jeff. They would take like a bunch of, you get like a pre-snap look.
Yeah.
Then they put the ball in the snap. Then as the play's in progress and on the back end when the play's finishing, you could see how they rotate. If they're trying to disguise too deep and the safety kicks down. It was more.
Right.
And then you could see where he ended up.
If you can't see, like, oh, maybe he bluffed this or did that. Like,
No. It was like, where'd he end up? Yeah. It was like, where'd he end up? And I thought what was the most unusual thing, and you take for granted, and I don't know why college football took so long to do this, why in the hell you can't communicate in the helmet?
Yeah, you know, this year. They just started
doing
that.
Yeah, they just did in college and go, what are you doing? That should have been 20 years ago.
Well, that's why they
ago.
Have all those crazy billboards and signs on the sidelines. Like, it's the most ridiculous thing, but we're just like, yeah, it works. Let's keep doing it.
No, because the only bad thing...
Well, and just not to cut you off, but that's why the whole Michigan thing happened, because you can steal the signs they're communicating.
Yeah, now, I've been a part of both. And oh, man, this is so much easier when the coach can actually talk to you in your helmet. Versus it was like baseball. We had to do hand singles.
Right.
And then you had to end up changing the hand singles because the team is filming what you're doing, so how you called plays. Now, you know what sucked? Is if you got hit hard and you got dinged. Oh, my God, he's doing all these hand singles.
You're seeing too many of them.
Oh, in 1989 when I got my teeth knocked out and all of a sudden I can't even, like, focus and sending in to play at hand singles. If you go to the Cajun Cannon restaurant, you could see that. Look at that weird pose. I said, well, I don't even remember what I'm doing. If you look at that thing, it was all part of the hand singles. What formation, what motion, what play you're going to run. So, I mean, to me, that was leaps and bounds going from hand singles to get in place. Because, you know, old school before that, you know what they used to do? You had 11 starters, but really you had 12 starters on offense. Because you had one player was kind of a half a starter, and they'd run in and out the huddle. Remember bringing the plays and tell the quarterback? But then all of a sudden, the fast-paced game, you get delayed game, and you got to go. So the coach would tell a player to play. They'd run in there, tell the quarterback, and then he'd stay in. The other guy would run out. So then they went to hand singles. How are you going to call a play? So now they just talk to you. which is the right thing to do in college football. Like Jeff said, finally got up to speed to do it the right way.
Moving on to our next bite of Dennis Allen. It was your question, Hebert. We just talked about it a little. He was asked, the coaching staff may be different with this Tennessee Titans team, but there's still that toughness to them in the trenches. And here's what he said.
Just looking at them on tape, there's a lot of similarities in just in terms of their toughness and their physicality and the way that they play. So I think really just like all these preseason games, I mean, there's an opportunity to get an evaluation, and you're trying to take into account who's in the game for us, who's in the game for them, you know, and trying to judge some things based on that, which sometimes can be a little bit skewed. But yeah, I do think this is a tough physical team, and I think, you know, we'll be able to see a few things for sure.
Well, you know what's skewed, and it was like, oh, look at that 95-yard drive we had against the 49ers. No, who are you freaking blocking? Them dudes ain't even going to be on the team. Or they might be on the team, but they're going to be the backups. Well, you got one or two guys that are going to be playing on the regular 49ers defense. So that's why you got to keep thinking things in perspective. You know, like, oh, you're all excited. Now, you got to block whoever's in front of you, and then you got to build your confidence. So that's why I'm still worried about the O-line. Because I don't know. It does matter who you're blocking. It doesn't matter who you're going against, and that's both ways. You know, if your D lineman's whooping this offensive lineman, well, that old lineman is going to be probably in the XFL or sell insurance. He ain't even be playing. Oh, look at him! Look how who's the one who always is outstanding? I think I was talking with Deuce about that from Dartmouth. I'll D tackle. Or Dean, I want to say.
Oh, like, Nico. Lalo's.
Yeah, Lalo. Okay, I think he had a game last year. He had like three sacks or two sacks.
It was three sacks. It was against the Chargers.
Yeah, and so it was like, okay, but who is he really beating? That guy who's beating there is not even on the team. So that's why you got to keep it in perspective. But you know what's bad is when you're counting on a guy. Are you counting on this individual, Foskey, whoever, and you might be going against an individual that you know is not going to be on that team, and you still don't look good.
Yep.
Now, that ain't good, to say the least.